You know, sometimes on the MTOM podcast, oh, by the way, I'm Paul Yeager. Welcome into our studio. You intend to talk about one topic, but you got to listen, and sometimes another topic comes to mind and needs to be discussed. The intent of this podcast, and yes, we will get to land values in Iowa and the most recent survey and what that is telling us about the ag economy in Iowa. We're also going to study China just a little bit because today's guest also studies China. He's educated there, educated in the United States, and now works at Iowa State University in the CARD Center, if you're familiar with that. That is a study of rural issues. Dr. Wendong Zhang is our guest today, and he has replaced Mike Duffy, who did the survey, and this thing dates back to 1941. Well, he's also getting a lot of media requests to talk about U.S. and China relations. We're going to spend the first few minutes discussing trade in those two issues. So if you are an agricultural producer and you're like, oh man, land values, but what about this thing with China? Well, we have a one-stop shop for you today. If you want to give us a review or share this with a friend, that would mean an awful lot. If you have a comment, leave it below or email me at paul.yeager@iowapbs.org. Now, let's get to class. Well, you have this nice, bright green picture behind you right now. Do you prefer that versus what's out your window now? Probably brown and white with snow and bleh.
This is the fictional virtual, the wonder of virtual backgrounds. But I have an old Iowa farm picture behind me.
Oh, you do? All right. Fair enough. How'd you end up at Iowa? In Iowa, at Iowa State? Your path right. is kind of all over.
Yeah. So this started from my dissertation at Ohio State. One of my dissertation essays looked at how urban influence affects Western Ohio farmland values. So I did some research related to farmland valuation, and when Dr. Mike Duffy retired and the decades-long, now 80-year-strong land value survey needs someone to shepherd in a way that I have the right credentials to lead the survey. So that's how I ended up getting the job. So I didn't anticipate the broke out the U.S.-China trade war, or I will be doing a lot more talks on Chinese agriculture. So since I came to Ames in 2015, I've probably done like nearly 200 presentations, virtual or in person, and probably two-thirds are about China now.
Your bio on your official bio on Iowa State, you know, puts land first, and then it's, oh yeah, by the way, this China thing, the relations between the United States. We're coming up on 4 years of the tariff trade war. I guess I didn't really plan to go into this, but there was a couple of news stories this week before we recorded this about analyzing that. From where you stand academically, what have you thought of some of those stories that have come out this week analyzing this trade issue between the two?
Right. I think there are, so this month is meaningful because 2 years ago, U.S. and China signed the Phase One trade deal. And now there are some systematic evaluation from the Biden administration on the performance or sort of the scorecards that on China's purchases of products from the United States. From purely the agricultural export standpoint, the China bought record amounts of beef, corn, pork in 2020, and significant purchase of soybeans. So overall, we are seeing higher exports of agricultural products to China. I don't necessarily fully attribute it to the Phase One deal. It's China's African swine fever and its recovery is probably a bigger factor. But politically, it's the agricultural export story is not as dire as the mainstream media now talks about things. But they're more commenting on the large gap for the manufactured goods and energy products exports. I think there are still, I don't anticipate a whole lot of actions because that we are both countries will have major political moments for midterm election, and China will have the party congress in the fall. But there are definitely some potentially mixed information. There are pressures for there are even news talking about that further tariffs needs to be added because China didn't meet these targets. I think that there at the same time we also saw senators calling for maybe pushing for removal of the tariffs. If you don't know that the trade war is still not over, that a significant hundreds of billions of products are still under tariffs, so there's a long lag effects of those things, and unfortunately, the U.S.-China political relations doesn't necessarily help. It's probably worse politically. And now compared to when we had the breakout of the trade war.
When you say not as good between the two, is that because of relationships between administrations, that one administration has different relationships, or was it just a change? Because we've had the change here. There hasn't been the change in leadership in China.
Right. So I think that it's probably an overall recognition from both countries. The business and political leaders realize that we are likely to see a lot more bumpy relationships in the decade ahead. And now with the change of administration, you see probably some shift in focus, that we see a lot more discussion on human rights. We see a lot more discussion on Hong Kong and Xinjiang. So these issues are not major issues, and COVID-19 and also the different strategies of dealing with COVID-19, it's also become one of the major differences where the Chinese government's coverage of the U.S. It has gone worse in general compared to prior years as well. Hmm. So I think that just economically, that the trade issue that the Biden administration or the U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai want to tackle related to the subsidies for state-owned enterprises in China is probably even more difficult issue. So it's hard to see how exactly you will tackle that, especially with the challenges in the relations and challenges in resuming regular talks because of the pandemic.
So the pandemic has caused a number of issues in just having some, because relationships, from what we've always understood, former ambassador from the United States to China, Terry Branstad, has said on this podcast before that relationships are extremely important, personal relationships in dealing with the Chinese. Yes. Do you concur with his statement?
Yes. So I do think that that's very important. And you can sort of tell the challenges and the further challenges posed by the pandemic by looking at how long it took for President Biden and President Xi Jinping of China to get a virtual summit together, right? So it took almost a year since the inauguration for them to get together. Typically, it happens probably 2-3 months after the new U.S. president took office, because everyone understands this is probably the most bilateral relationships in the world that not only matters for U.S. and China, but also matters for all other countries in the world as well.
Yeah, and we could discuss China. In fact, I could discuss the Olympic implications. I was just reading about how there's not been much mention of human rights by NBC during the Olympics, but we need to shift to another big topic that we cover on Market to Market, and that is inputs and land and places to plant for this American farmer right now. And it is getting expensive. You mentioned Mr. Duffy and his work. That was always something quoted on our show over the years, and you inherit a land survey. Let's first just give me the nuts and bolts. How do you conduct this survey?
Right. So I'm proud to say that this is this survey was started by Dr. William Murray in 1941. So for the listeners that Dr. Murray is the one who founded Iowa Living History Farm, so this is sort of the first of its kind in the nation. And what we do is it's called the Expert Opinion Survey. So we every November we send out mail and email invitations to farm managers, agricultural lenders, rural appraisers, and others who are knowledgeable about the local land market. We ask what their expert opinions are for the typical market prices for high, medium, and low quality land in their county that they provide a professional service. And so every year we conduct this data collection for about a month. And then we every year we got about 600 to 700 responses. And then we aggregate them. We also pay attention to the spatial relationship based on historical ag census. But in general, every mid-December, through your local newspaper, you will see the results. You can also see it on the Iowa State University CARD farmland portal. Since I took over, we not only showcase the current year results, we also have merged and added to all the historical records. So you can now easily find land value information for your county and your crop reporting district since 1950. So that's how we do the survey.
The headline for the December 2021 survey was quite a grab, up 29%, highest since the survey started with Dr. Murray in 1941. What's contributing to that?
Right. So if you think about that, we have seen a phenomenal increase in land market. And if you look at the auction prices, probably even stronger than 30%, especially in Northwest Iowa. There are a couple of factors that drive this. Looking at the farm, I have talked about this, that land value roughly can be sort of income divided by interest rate. So if we break down, income includes crop income. Commodity prices are much higher, in part due to what we discussed earlier, that China bought much, much more corn than we expected since the fall of 2020. I want to caution you that these momentum because for pork and corn imports are weakening because China completed the hog rebuilding after the African swine fever. But that's one that we are talking about $5 corn rather than $3 corn. For yield, we had weather challenges through the growing season, but in the end, we got the rain we needed, and the yield are stronger than expected. Right, so the crop income is much higher. Even the livestock income are stronger as well. On top of that, we didn't get the record level $46 billion of government payments as in 2020, but we still got a hefty 20-some billion dollars of agricultural ad hoc payments from the federal governments to the U.S. ag economy. So that supported the income portion. And we are now talking about the Federal Reserve are likely to raise interest rate. But when you are looking at the general interest rate environment, we are still in a very low interest rate environment. And if you recall, in March 2020, in order to combat the potential uncertainty and the risk of a recession, the Federal Reserve drastically cut the interest rate to near zero levels, right? So go back to the formula, the land value equals income divided by interest rate. The income is much higher. The interest rate is still, it's lower and remains low, and that really pushed up the momentum. And on top of that, you also potentially could get some of the PPP loans and some other CARES Act payments that also made some of the folks more excited about the market. And we also see, because of the concerns about potential inflation or the desire to find a rural acreage and things along those lines, I think you also see a small uptick in the investor demand as well. So I think sort of you see a perfect storm coming together in the sense, and this is not just our survey. That if you look at the Chicago Fed survey, they show exactly 30% increase for Iowa land values as well. And across the Midwest, that you see probably Indiana show about 25 or more percent increase, and close to 20% for Illinois and for Nebraska and Missouri. So there are something macro that is happening, but it's also very interesting to look into how this change farmland market.
Yeah, the Kansas City Fed, I think, just said 24% or maybe 25% just this morning before or yesterday. You held off on the term I was going to use for the next question, was the perfect storm. It sounded like we had all of these factors come together. So is this the peak? Is 2021 going to be the peak or at least let off the gas of a 29% increase in land values?
I definitely think that we are unlikely to see a 29% increase. That if you as part of the land value survey, we see that the respondents overall expect probably around 10%, slightly below or above that growth this year. I do think that based on the current evidence, we're likely to see a continuation of the increase rather than the decline. However, we looked into one thing to be closely watching is the monetary policy moves by the Federal Reserve, because we're likely to see 3 hikes this year and potentially 3 or 4 hikes next year. So to translate it, For the general audience, you currently are looking at the farmland loan rate roughly at 4%, 4.5%, right? So 3 hikes, meaning that you're getting 0.75% increase. 4 hikes is another 1%. So you, after all these, your loan rate could increase from low fours to high, 6-some percent or 6.5%. Something along those lines, right? So they are very important, and the market could be very sensitive to that. There are importance to bear in mind that these policies take a long time to be fully absorbed in the market. So we definitely will see downward pressure. So go back to the formulas, the interest rate is on the denominator. So the hike in the interest rate will increase your financing cost, will also make other bond and other investment more attractive. So definitely put downward pressure, but we probably wouldn't see the downward pressure realized in the land market until 2023. So this 2022, we likely are still seeing increase, but we need to watch how the more medium future market do, because as I mentioned, there are some risk factors along with the interest rate changes, but also that the Chinese demand for pork and corn are also slowing down compared to 2020 and 2021 levels. So those could potentially, and you are seeing much higher input cost as we go into this growing season as well.
Well, yeah, net farm income is projected to be lower for some of those exact same factors that you mentioned. But on Wednesday, we're recording this on a Thursday. Yesterday, the soybean market jumped a bunch, and that's been happening, these 20-cent, 30-cent moves, as we hear weather reports in South America saying it's dry or it's wetter. There's a Ukraine-Russia battle, and that geopolitical. Could that be enough to counter, maybe, say, less buying by China in pork to restock their herds or feed their new herds? Are there other things in the world that can compensate for losses in other places that might still keep us elevated here in 22?
Right. I want to emphasize that I think that we will still see fairly strong purchases from China. That it's just that we had two record-breaking purchase years from China. So we're probably potentially see some weakness in that. But it's even the beef exports are really strong. So I'm not saying that we're the Chinese are no longer buying U.S. products, right? So if you're thinking about the amount of the product they need, China can only produce 15% of the soybean they need. They need over 80% from the global market, and they cannot buy all from Brazil. So U.S. is indispensable in a sense, right? But you are exactly right that the market will potentially respond to all the macro factors and also that how the stock market reacts to the interest rate changes could also change the non-farm investor demand and their views on the attractiveness of farmland as well. So that's potentially important. But I do want to point out that there are some weakness when you are looking ahead, especially 2 years down the road. And so if you're a producer, when you are thinking about your marketing plans, you probably want to take advantage, at least to try to think about marketing plans that you can take advantage of the really high prices now. And typically we will have this spring rally because of the weather concerns or because some other geopolitical issues that are going on. But overall, we see that despite the input cost rises, that because of the high commodity prices now we are seeing that you could still enjoy a comfortable profit margin, especially if your cash rent didn't drastically change this year.
Right, and that's going to impact people, whether it's a 40 like this or, you know, that because I'm a landowner who's maybe not on the farm, I'm remote, and I see, oh my goodness, I see beans in the teens, I'm going to raise my rent. Is that also something you track in the survey?
So that's tracked by my colleague Alejandro Plastina, but it's the anecdotal, so that results will be released this May. It's the ISU cash rent survey, so definitely you should pay attention to that. But the anecdotal evidence I heard is that we see a lot of the increase, probably 15 to 20%, if not more, in cash rent. So depending on your mix of owned versus rented acres, that this does affect your cost of production significantly, especially that now the fertilizer costs and the machinery inputs and also up as well, that this also puts pressure on the beginning farmers. And I teach a class of farmland appraisal class with 40 students. 30 out of the 40 want to go back to the farm. And if they don't already have a parents or like grandparents who would let them go back, and if they're just thinking about buying an 80 acre now, it's very costly, especially for early, like a 20 year old, right?
Yeah, it would absolutely be prohibitive cost-wise. No beginning farmer is going to cover some of these prices right now. So yeah, the young investment, we could be, I'm not saying this is a generational loss, but I mean, we could lose for a couple, 2-3 years. This is going to have a long tail, right?
Right. So when you're thinking about another thing, when you look ahead, there are downward pressures, but if you look at historically, we had corn prices drop from $7 to $3 from 2013 to 2016. And farm income dropped about 50% during that time. And everyone probably expected that we will see 20 to 30% loss in farmland value. In the end, that we only see probably 15%. So farmland value and cash rent by association in a way are quite sticky, and that's part of the attractiveness, especially when on the downward path. So that's why now more investors, and which not necessarily just includes like people like Bill Gates, but it also includes retired farmer, people who have rural connections. In general, they're looking at the longer term investment options that farmland tends to offer this robust and robust return, and it's less volatility, especially compared to some of the other options.
Less volatility. Now that's funny. Like that, there's hardly been an agriculture, it seems, here in the last few years that there's been less volatility. We've been dealing with more. We have a friend of the show west of the Des Moines area who has been trying to buy some land so he can expand and join the family farm operation. And he says that the price, this was going back, I think, to November, maybe October, we were having this conversation, that he was getting priced out of the market by outside investors with a lot of zip codes that were California. You mentioned the Bill Gates of the world. Why are some of these larger investors, not the retired farmers that you mentioned, right, but outside investors, all of a sudden seeing Iowa farmland or rural farmland as a good place to park some money and invest?
So I think inflation is a major issue that they when they're thinking about that, the when inflation goes up, that the farmland values tends to move up. In a high in a current environment, we're seeing the highest inflation level in the last 4 decades. That attracts a lot of people to consider not only farmland but also other type of real estate as well. But there's also sort of the urgency in a sense that there's way less availability for prime farmland, that they recognize that because the location, because the soil quality, because the climate, even if we have some downward pressure, that it's probably the Dakota land value will fluctuate more than the I states land markets as well. So I think that also definitely attracts people. Another thing to bear in mind is that when you are thinking about all the other investors, they already have a lot of stocks and the money markets and all the other things. So right, so they're the farmland to them adds diversification benefits as well. That you are now not only looking at the portfolio of bonds and the U.S. and the global stock market, right? So you also have these farmland that is relatively stable regardless, right? So that give you more diversification benefits as well. And some of the people with the newer trends on sustainability, on carbon credits, and the betting on maybe longer run row of agriculture can play in the sustainability issues, right? So they're also thinking about that, that this potentially could generate some returns, especially down the road, right?
Economic investment diversity. It happens everywhere, and farmland seems like a good hedge against inflation. That's the way the old thinking goes.
Right. Yeah. I think that's definitely part of that. And I also want to pay attention, if you look at all the land that is Bill Gates and Ted Turner are buying, they're not buying a whole lot Iowa farmland. They're buying a lot more timber grounds, pasture grounds in Montana, in Southeast, in Northeast. Right? So these are in part because the rate of return is probably higher, and they're maybe related to the carbon sink for these trees as well. They're also a natural amenity value. So we do pay attention to the corporation ownership of Iowa farmland, but it's overall, our survey shows that consistently it's a local farmer buying local land is the major story that is nearly 70% of the land are bought by local existing farmers.
And the old saying of they're not making any more farmland also contributes to this as well.
Especially as high as the quality for the as the Iowa farmland.
Right. Yeah, and we could discuss, we'll probably have to do this again because we'll have to get into the ramifications of moratoriums being put on no solar farms, on high-quality ag land, and I know that's not playing necessarily in Iowa, but it is in surrounding states, so there's always going to be something to talk about.
Yep, yep. I think that I'm paying a lot of attention to the energy infrastructures, the carbon pipeline everyone is watching. We are doing research related to wind farms and even broadband and electricity transmission lines, right? So, which is also related to the solar farm as well. I talked with a professor from Purdue, and they're talking about that this exactly as you mentioned, that utility scale solar farms is a very important issue in Indiana already, right? So it's not just in North Carolina or California, it's in the surrounding area already.
Yeah, we've been watching that in one of those Indiana stories. I think there's a couple of documentaries out about those efforts in near South Bend. And yeah, there's always something new for that that prime Iowa farmland or farmland in general that people are looking at. All right, Doctor, I appreciate your time. Thank you so very much. And we will absolutely do this again. Thank you.
Thank you.
My thanks to the good doctor for the insight on what is happening both with China-U.S. relations as well as land values and what are some of the forces pushing that up. And will we see an extension in 2022? Maybe not 29%, but interesting nonetheless in what we covered in that discussion. Any feedback for the program? Market to Market at iowapbs.org. We'll see you next time. Each Tuesday, a new episode of this podcast is released. Thank you, and we'll see you later.